Okay. I remember what time of day it is, too. It's the morning, afternoon. You ready, Esther?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Daryl, you ready?
I'm ready.
Jermaine, Julie, we're good?
I'm ready.
Commissioner?
Ready.
All right. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colker meeting for a special meeting today. It is Tuesday, November 25th, approximately 1 o'clock. We're meeting for a special meeting on two agenda items, and remind my colleagues and myself that for special meetings, we're restricted to the topics that are on the agenda. We've got two motions today. I have the first one. Before I get to that, I'll see if there's any opening comments from my colleagues.
No opening comments.
Julie?
No comments for me.
Okay, let's get right to it. Item number BK1. I move the commission file comments and Public Service Commission EPA proposed 111D regulations, information case number AD14-736.
Second.
I have some comments on this. What I'd like to do is turn it over to Commissioner Crispin. Commissioner Crispin actually took the lead in working with staff and Victor on preparing the comments, so I'll let Randy go through the comments, and I'll probably have a few of my own once he finishes up. So, Commissioner, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, we've certainly worked on this for a long period of time. We've held a seminar here in Bismarck. We held that seminar here in Bismarck in January, I believe, of 2014, and basically have worked on it for almost this full 12-month period. We had a very good turnout at our seminar in Fargo. We've had people from the FERC, from the NERC, which is the North American Energy Reliability Corporation, from EPA, from the various utilities, from the public. And when I say utilities, I mean both investor-owned and cooperative-owned. We've taken public comment. We opened it back up for public comment again in October. I think we've taken in an extraordinary amount of information in this past year. And I think it all points toward one thing, and that is that the EPA's 111D rules, if imposed, is going to be devastating to the state of North Dakota and to the people here. It's going to be devastating, as far as I'm concerned, to the nation. But, our role, of course, here is specifically with the state. One of the things that I think, beyond the reliability and the affordability factors, one of the key things that I keep coming back to is that constitutionally this is just not a role for the Environmental Protection Agency. It's not authorized by federal law, and it takes away this commission's authority. It's important that officials like us who are elected by the citizens of North Dakota and who are accountable to the state be able to do our jobs. I got some information from a federal case. I just want to read a bit out of the commission comments here. To protect federalism, the Supreme Court of the United States has barred the federal government from usurping the authority of the states and has prohibited state officers from being forced to administer federal programs. The federal government may not compel the states to enact or administer a federal regulatory program. The state court's anti-commandeering doctrine began with District of Columbia versus Train. And in that case, the Supreme Court found similar EPA overreach of constitutional proportions. And following decisions by the Fourth and Ninth Circuits, which separately struck down the EPA's vehicle emission rules on statutory grounds in order to avoid resolving what the Supreme Court has described as grave constitutional problems, the D.C. Circuit invalidated the EPA's auto regulations on both statutory and constitutional grounds. That court rejected the EPA's attempt to commandeer the regulatory powers of the states, along with their personnel and resources, for use in administering and enforcing a federal regulatory program. So I think that this is a very similar situation. I have grave concerns about their ability to do as they seek to do here and commandeer us and our resources to implement their rules. I think that in this case, basically, the president through the EPA is going to dismantle our dependable and affordable electric system that we have built over the years. This and what they'll replace it with is a system of arbitrary objectives based on false facts And sadly, they seem more concerned about appeasing the environmental activists than they do about maintaining the proper functioning of our electric system. And lastly, I want to say that I certainly would call on our state health department, along with similar agencies around the nation, to not adopt plans to implement these rules and thus not move forward with allowing them to commandeer ourselves and our services. So I'll leave it with that and hear from the two of you, please.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any comments on this?
I sure do, but I'd be happy to.
Oh, then it's all clean up.
All right. So basically our comments that we're submitting to the EPA, the deadline, I believe, is December 1st. Is that correct, Randy?
Correct.
So we're going to be submitting our comments today, and so we're getting there in advance of the deadline. And they basically outline three things. First of all, our concerns about reliability, concerns about the affordability and the impact to customers, and then finally the impact it has on states' rights, and which Randy just talked about. I just want to expand on a couple things. First of all, you know, I think the public might ask, why does it matter if the states are in charge of this? Why is it so important for the states to be state regulators like ourselves, be responsible for regulating the utility industry? And I think it comes down to the importance of the electric reliability and the importance of the utility industry to the public. States are responsible because this has a very serious impact to consumers. Everybody is dependent on electricity for their own public safety and for the businesses that run our economy. And so the importance of this, of the utility industry, is underscored by having local officials at the state level responsible for regulating that and maintaining and overseeing the reliability of the system. We are accountable to the people here, and so it's much more direct responsibility to the public having authorities like us in charge versus folks out in D.C. who can hide in an office and not be accountable to the people that they're serving. And so I think that kind of underscores why it matters to have the states involved and why we're going to be fighting so hard against the rule in that it jeopardizes the authority that we have and the responsibility we have and are elected to serve the citizens of the state and maintain the reliability of the system, maintain the affordability of the electric system, and look at the planning and the demand and making sure we have enough generation to meet that demand. So that just expands a little bit on one of the key points that we make in our comments, and that is on the threat that these pose to the authority that we have and the jurisdiction that we have at the PSC. My other concerns really fall into four categories. First of all, these rules, as proposed, are completely untested and technically unproven. And we have this from the top authority in the country on reliability, the head of the North American Energy Reliability Corporation, Jerry Colley, was invited and attended our reliability symposium in Fargo a couple months ago. And he said those exact words: these are untested rules. We cannot say that these rules can be implemented and reliability maintained. So that alone gives me enough reason to say they need to start over. We cannot support the implementation of these rules without some assurance that the reliability can be maintained. Secondly, just a couple hours ago, we had the leaders from the MISO, independent system operator, in town and visiting with us, and they talked about the impact these rules have on costs. MISO manages the transmission system in our region right now, and so they make sure that there's enough generation available and that it's transmitted to the people who need it throughout North Dakota and throughout a good chunk of the U.S. MISO has estimated in their modeling that this rule would cost $90 billion to implement. And that doesn't even account for the cost of it accounts for the cost of new generation facilities, but it doesn't account for the cost of pipelines to serve new gas-fired generation facilities. It doesn't account for any new transmission to and from those facilities to get the power to the people, and it doesn't account for the stranded costs that people will pay for the existing facilities that will be shut down. So those are some significant impacts on top of the $90 billion, and that's just the baseline of their modeling of what this would cost. Secondly, the timeline, or thirdly, the timeline is unrealistic. This rule proposes to have and implement some significant milestones achieved by 2020. We can't even get this the plans developed in a state implementation plan developed and approved in that time frame, most of the utilities would say, and much less to be already achieving some of the significant interim milestones that the EPA has set out. And then finally, all of this is done, and you cannot really find a measurable, a real authority saying what the measurable environmental gains will be after all of the implementation. They can quantify the reduction in carbon dioxide, but they cannot say what kind of an impact that's going to have on climate change or anything else. So to me, they're untested. They stand to jeopardize reliability. They're going to cost billions of dollars. The timeline is unrealistic. So I fully support the comments we're making to the EPA and saying they need to start over.
Thank you, Julie. I agree with everything my colleague said on it. I just want to throw a little more context in this. And this has been a long, drawn-out process where, you know, the EPA came out with these proposed CO2 rules a while back, and then there was a lot of question about what it exactly meant, and then they wanted comments due by October 15th. And then, of course, all of a sudden that got moved to December 1st, and I think that was a political decision that they being the administration, wanted to move this back till after the election cycle. And we saw what happened in the election cycle. Nationally, a lot of seats changed. And a lot of my colleagues around the country that were on commissions are no longer on those commissions because those governor offices changed. So there's been a lot of discussion about this nationally, about what's the right move. And I tell you that the people spoke on some of these things. And so here we are in North Dakota, and we're paring it back down a little bit. But so these comments will be filed later today. We'll send them in. December 1st is the deadline. The comments don't become final until June of 2015. And so we've given our comments about what we think is right about this, what is wrong about this. There wasn't a lot right on it, but our comments basically were sent in there that maybe they being the EPA, will change their comments so the final rules would look different than the proposed rules. I just got back from a conference last week with a bunch of public utility regulators, and the EPA was out there as well, and they basically said they don't really plan on changing these comments from proposed to final. So then I asked the question, I said, if you had no intent of changing the comments, why did you ask all of us to submit it? And so that's still a question that's out there. And quite honestly, one of the attorneys in the group came back to me and said, all these comments really do is that they set up the legal argument that's going to continue throughout the country. And so what I anticipate happening is we file these comments today. We've urged the health department to not do a state implementation plan, because the way I see this playing out is if a state offers up a SIP, the state plan, basically you're giving away your rights to regulate the state's electricity industry. So why would a state do that? It makes no sense to me. So as this thing gets litigated, I think that's going to be one of the key points that come out of this, is that what is the EPA doing in clearly state's jurisdiction? And so that's where, come June of 2015, we'll have meetings, I'm sure, with the Attorney General of North Dakota. We'll urge him to consider a litigating for the state of North Dakota. We'll be in conversation with the governor's office as well as the health department. But I know Attorney General Stengem is well aware of this situation, and I'm sure he'll do the right thing on this. And so what's going to happen is this court cases will be filed not just in North Dakota, but many groups will queue it up. And then those court cases will plug and chug till that they get to some type of resolution. But in the meantime, there's this uncertainty that's being created throughout the electricity industry where, you know, MDU, Otter Tail, Basin Electric, they need to build more generation to meet the needs. We need to replace existing facilities, and nothing is happening. And that's where both Commissioner Fedorchak and Commissioner Christman's comments about how this is affecting the reliability of the grid are, to me, the most important. I'm not here to debate global warming. Okay, that's something that people get entrenched on both sides, and there's no movement in the middle. But this is going to devastate reliability of the power grid. There's no way it's not going to. If you take this type of wholesale generation, you take it off the grid and replace it with interim renewables, if you can do it cost-effectively, the reliability is not going to be there. And Julie pointed out the head individual from NERC came here and said, this has never been tested. It's never been modeled. We can't even make a change to a power line without modeling the effects on reliability. And so the points in this thing is it's a reckless plan by the president. He's using his executive authority to try to push it through the EPA. And it's very, very unfortunate for North Dakota customers. And I will say this to those folks out there that think that we're just all pro-coal. In North Dakota, we've gone from 0 to 2,000 megawatts of wind energy in the last decade. That's 0 to 2,000. Huge. No state can even come close to that. We've gone from 0 to almost 400 megawatts of natural gas generation in the last few years. No other state can talk about that either. But we're going to fight for our coal resources. We actually are continuing work through the Lignite Council and others of ways to capture CO2, use it for enhanced oil recovery to make it a commodity. So it's not that we're not looking at other solutions for this, if you will, but doing it in a way that is affordable, keeps reliability there, and we're going to continue to be leaders for the state and the region. All of us are involved in national organizations, but you know, our comments today I think are very significant because, to my knowledge, we're the first commission that's come out and urged other commissions to not do a state implementation plan. That's the first time I've heard of anybody doing that. And so I'll be on the phone with as many colleagues as I can get around the country and telling them our position on this and urging them to do the same. You know, and this is not a direct parallel, but it kind of comes down to the healthcare rollout where the president urged healthcare exchanges from different states, and then some states didn't, some didn't do it. Well, North Dakota didn't do it, and that was a pretty good decision. And so I think this is where the president is trying this one-size-fits-all approach. And so I kind of guess I'm going around in circles here a little bit now. But the bottom line is that we've spent a lot of time and a lot of energy looking at this very objectively. We've held those seminars on reliability. We've gotten feedback from our companies we regulate. We've talked to groups. But there is no way that these proposed rules will do anything good for reliability or customers. So look at my notes here real quick. But I think that really kind of sums it up. And we're going to continue this, and I look forward to come June of 2015. We'll see how this plays out. But it's just this is, I guess, one more step in a long process. Any follow-up?
I do have one more point, Mr. Chairman, that I neglected to make earlier. I kind of rushed from another project. And in 18 years in the state Senate before coming here, I represented a lot of great working people in North Dakota that produce energy and get it done. And during that time, I don't want to leave the impression that we're just against any kind of new regulation. During that time, you know, there's been new things come out regarding SOx, regarding nitrous oxide, regarding heavy metals such as mercury, regarding regional haze, and in a number of cases, the state has done a state implementation plan, and we've moved forward, made improvements at enormous investment from the utility companies, and we have made these improvements. A big distinction was, A, the technology existed when the rule came out, and they were able to do it, and B, they were rules that had to do with the power producer. They were inside-the-fence rules. Out of the four building blocks in this carbon dioxide rule proposal, three of them call for outside defense projects where the EPA has no regulatory authority. And I want to point out that is a big distinction here. Other projects, we have cooperated. Our health department has been great at this, doing these excellent implementation plans to do things inside the fence. But the EPA cannot commandeer us to force companies, to force consumers to cut back on their power, to buy different appliances, to do all these kinds of things, invest in different electric generation units and those sorts of things. That is a big distinction. So it's not that we don't want to cooperate when the possibility is there to make improvements, but we need to be reasonable. This proposal is totally unreasonable.
Just to echo that, too, because I was, I think that's an important point, too. One of the things that we heard a lot from the utilities in our meetings with them, and we've visited with all of them and had them in here to hear their direct concerns, is they have across the board reduced emissions themselves by between 10 and 15% over the last few years, by implementing what Randy discussed and also the incorporation of renewables and wind. And that has been that has occurred without any heavy-handed mandates from EPA, but rather some incentives passed by Congress. That is a far preferable way to implement this kind of policy, pass the policy initiatives through Congress, where it's voted on by the elected representatives of the people of this country, implemented in a very deliberate way with a reasonable time frame that can be achievable without jeopardizing reliability or costing consumers and businesses billions of dollars. So I think that we have a pathway ahead of us. It's working, and I think that the EPA should have let our elected officials deal with this issue the way that our system is set up to do that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. If it's okay with my colleagues, usually we finish up the meeting, then we go to questions, but I suspect the media is all here for this first motion. So if it's okay with you two, I would just go into questions, and then we'll finish up our agenda. So if there are any questions from the media, we'd be happy to entertain those at this time.
Just on the timeline, so the comments are finalized in June. When is the rule finalized?
Our comments have to be in December 1st, and so the rule will be finalized June of 2015. And so then,
both for new and existing plants?
That would be just for
existing.
Existing. The new one is already finalized.
The new one is already out.
It's done.
And that's when I think, Mike, what you'll see is that the state of North Dakota, through the Attorney General's office, will make a decision what they're going to do. But I already know that there's groups all over the country, from trade groups to commerce groups, that are gearing up for the litigation. And quite honestly, this filing today, you can read through it, but it's been reviewed by our legal team, and it's a setup of preserving North Dakota's rights through litigation. And the PSC has some points that may differ from the health department, that may differ from others. But for me, the biggest point was, I guess you probably heard it today, of just states' rights.
It's an important point that you made regarding the distinction between the new and existing. So the rules for new generation facilities were, I think, approved last June. And this is all for existing facilities. So the requirements that new facilities must meet a certain threshold for carbon dioxide emissions that is unachievable by by the highest efficiency coal generation technology today, without carbon capture and storage. So
is that being challenged?
Yes,
that is.
Isn't it legally challenged?
North Dakota is not in the middle of that, but that is being challenged. So yeah. I understand it. But I would say, Mike, though, I think that we've taken a very pragmatic approach to the way coal is being used. I referred to the Lignite Council, and I'll give a plug for University of North Dakota, Julie.
Yes.
The EERC up there has been doing work on carbon sequestration and enhanced oil recovery through CO2. So what I would envision is that North Dakota is going to continue to use coal. But we want to make sure that, you know, the existing fleet we can use through the existing life. And that's one of the challenges we heard from MISO this morning, is that if these rules get pushed through, all of a sudden you've had advanced retirement, early retirement of coals, you've got stranded investment, as well as you have to build new generation that may or may not be as reliable. There's a time lag, so it's looking at all these different components. But that's where, you know, we are looking at new technologies, as Randy pointed out, and ways to use CO2. We've had discussion with the oil developers that they have a desire for CO2 for oil recovery, not right now, but at some point in time. So I think we're taking a very, very pragmatic approach of how we're dealing with energy regulation in the state.
A quick question. I know that this is talking about existing plants, but looking towards the future, you talked a little bit about the uncertainty in terms of an environment that this has created. And have you guys heard from a lot of energy producers that this is something that they're taking into account as they're looking into maintaining the grid forward, that coal isn't really part of the picture for them anymore?
Absolutely. The MDU was very, very upfront. In one of their meetings they had with us, they said, you know, right now we're not even considering coal. We're looking at all natural gas. And that's unfortunate, because we've got all the great lignite coal here. It's mine-mouth coal. There's challenges around the country of coal being able to get shipped to the power plants. We don't have that challenge right here. So it's very unfortunate right now, because we need more power in North Dakota. So we've got to protect our existing fleet, figure out a way to build new generation, and we need to have more new generation than just wind and natural gas. You know, coal is so much more affordable. We just, you know, Randy has more background in the coal country, but it's just...
But, you know, part of one of the attachments that we're sending in with our comments is the KLJ study that was done about future power needs. And, you know, they're talking several thousand megawatts additional power needed in North Dakota by 2030. And almost very little is being done to get there now, up till now. Now, there are some projects on the horizon. We've got a few wind farms. We've got some peaking plants. I'm pleased to say Basin Electric has been talking about this gas plant, but you notice none of it is coal. And And certainly, you know, the wind and the peaking plants, they have a role. But if we want dependable, affordable power, we need some base load, and that we're not going to build nuclear here. So it basically means either coal or combined cycle gas. And right now we're in the early stages of one combined cycle gas plant, and that is nowhere near getting to that several thousand megawatts.
The interesting other issue with the gas, and this whole debate really is made possible by the shale revolution. If we didn't have this shale gas resource that's been discovered and developed in the last 5 to 8 years, this wouldn't even be remotely feasible, because you wouldn't have the resource to support the gas power generation. So we have that, and that's a great thing, and we have it in abundance in North Dakota. So we have some good alternatives that I think are viable. But the one thing you need to make gas power generation work long-term are pipelines. And we're hearing an awful lot of protests about pipeline development, not so much in North Dakota, but nationally. So there again, I mean, we have to have the energy someplace. You have to have the supply, and that's where coal is a great alternative, because you don't need pipelines for coal. You need trains, and you need to be able to stockpile it or have the mine-to-mouth facilities like we have in North Dakota. But, you know, so I think this really is going to force Americans to think about where we get our power, where we get our energy, and how we, you know, what's reasonable long term, and we have to have the infrastructure to keep this system alive and functioning.
And the commissioners, all three of us, are working in different avenues about companies that do energy storage. We're continuing to look at options for that, because at some point in time, if you can store energy, that helps out a lot. Looking at demand side management, look at doing the full gamut of energy, but it is impossible to have a reliable grid without baseload power. And that's the big thing here, is just the reliability, that if this gets pushed through and all of a sudden the lights don't come on in North Dakota, we got to avoid that. It really just, it's that simple of an argument that I get frustrated with those that are driving this agenda, because If those that think, okay, we could get rid of coal and then run it all on natural gas, those people that don't like coal are then going to be going after natural gas. They don't like the fossil fuels. That's my viewpoint on that.
When technology will develop, look at what's happened with wind in the last 10 years. They've gotten a lot more efficient, a lot more affordable. They still don't know haven't figured out how to store it, so it doesn't replace baseload, but it sure has become a great a peaking facility, and it's a great technology that will develop over time, and we need to continue investing in that and developing these kind of rules and regulations as the technology develops.
Could you just explain a little bit more about the state health department and the state implementation plan? I mean, are you worried that would be an invitation for the EPA to come and take over state authority over some of these areas, and is the health department, are you aware, are they currently preparing a state implementation plan?
Well, I'll let Dave Glott answer all those questions, but I'll give you my we've certainly visited with Dave, and he's sat here at the table. Mm-hmm. But I guess my concern is this, that the state health department, they're the authority that would do a SIP. And the governor's, of course, is obviously involved in that. But my concern would be, if North Dakota Health Department offers up a SIP, basically they're offering up some of what I consider our jurisdictional energy generation, that they think that letting somebody else manage that, that's my job to manage. And so the health department has a role in air quality. There's no question about that, but not in energy generation. And that's where the concern that I have about offering up a SIP, are we offering up the responsibility of deciding what energy to generate? And so I know that Mr. Glott has been involved, and Dave has had the health department held a seminar at BSC, invited 25 different states. I know that he's attended all of our meetings, and I know Commissioner Crisman has talked to him quite a bit in the preparing of these comments. So... But I don't want to, I guess, hypothesize anymore what they're going to do.
I think it's important, you know, you can speak to Dave and he can speak for the health department. But I do think that if North Dakota chooses to venture out and does prepare a state implementation plan, that yes, we will have ceded some of our authority over to the EPA to accomplish their goals. And these are not our goals, they're their goals. They have no authority, and really the only way that I can see that they can pursue these and enforce these rules is if we cede to them and let them commandeer our state powers.
I think the challenge is that to try to walk it back to the consumer about how this affects them. You know, right now, whenever a company comes in to build generation, we ask a lot of questions about what the cost is going to be, how much it'll affect their bills. But there's a gamut of choices. We can either approve it or disapprove it, and they can go different places. Well, if these plans are being fed down by the EPA, North Dakota will be told what exactly to build for generation. And in those costs, there'll be no one representing North Dakota in that rate-making procedures. And those costs will be passed through the company, through the commission, right to the ratepayer. And Julie laid out, at a minimum, this is, you know, was it $990 billion, you said? And that's not even including the cost of stranded investments. So you take that divided by North Dakota ratepayers, it's a bizarre cost. I mean, you go from basically 12-cent power, 8-cent power, to what, 30, 40-cent power that's not reliable? I mean, it just, that's where you walk this back. What we're trying to prevent is to make sure we don't give up the state's rights and authority to make sure we represent ratepayers.
That $90 billion was just for North Dakota?
No, that was for the entire MISO region, and that was a baseline figure. So there was some big, pretty big categories of costs that aren't included in that.
Has there been any study of what this could mean for North Dakota ratepayers as far as an increase in percentage-wise?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Well, when we had our,
I mean, we've asked, but it's all.
When we asked during our symposiums, the companies did their best they could do to guesstimate it, and they talked about it doubling of power rates. I mean, it's really hard to tell. But the point is it's going to be a lot more. And the reliability component, back to that again. Yeah.
Well, and when it comes to the, you know, putting a dollar amount on, we always, you know, tend to want to do that, get a dollar amount on it. But the fact is these are just arbitrary rules that they came up with. And, you know, they're calling for things that don't, technology improvements that do not exist. So how do you put a dollar amount on something that hasn't been invented yet? And so, you know, it's not that they're stonewalling us. They don't know either how much it would cost until somebody invents it.
Nothing else, Mary Kay?
No. I've a thought that I want to leave you with, because I looked over past Daryl and I see that picture, and there were some guests that came from a little country and visited us, and they're just south of
not
Ukraine.
The most, it's the
these people are from just south of Ukraine. And they were extraordinarily envious of us in that our gas and our electricity almost always works every time we want it. We flip a switch, the lights comes on. Come on. We turn the thermostat up, the heat comes on. That's not the case in their country. And it sets them back economically from being prosperous like America is. And it also is harmful to people when you go without heat or without, especially people with breathing disorders and those types of things that need machines to work. And the federal government tries to appease a group of environmental activists, and in order to do so just comes up with arbitrary rules like this based on false facts. We get on the verge of turning ourselves into another little country like that where the lights don't come on when you hit the switch and the heat doesn't come on when you turn up the thermostat. I don't want to see that for America. I don't want to see that for North Dakota. And I think we need to fight this with every ounce of our ability to do so.
I want to stand up and salute. No, it's true. It's absolutely true. Okay, Julie, anything else?
I don't have any.
Mike?
Randy said it best at the end here.
KX? Okay, we'll go back to our regular scheduled meeting then. Thank you all for coming. You're welcome to stay, of course. We're not. The Attorney General says we can't ask you to leave, nor, not that we ever would. Okay? So, meeting's still going on. All righty, that concludes item BK1. Randy, I'll move over to you for item RC1.
Move the Commission issue a notice of formal hearing on the decision to issue surface coal mining permit NACC-1302 to the Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC.
Second.
On November 24th, the Commission received a request for a formal hearing in the matter from a landowner in the permit area. And we have a time deadline when a request like that is made. I think, if I remember right, the deadline date would be the 24th of December to follow law. We found an opening for the hearing room and for us and staff and on the 19th of December, so we're within just a few days of what our legal deadline would be, and so that would be the date involved here.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All righty. Thank you, Daryl. Anything else, Randy?
I do not.
Commissioner Dvorak?
No, I just would like to clarify on one acronym that we use, that MISO is Midwest Independent System Operator. And it, if you look up, you could get the territory. I couldn't list off all the states, but how many states are involved?
Basically, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, you know, that upper Midwest.
And then down,
there's 14 states that are involved.
Yeah, so that's the, they operate the transmission system in this Midwest region. So Midwest Independent System Operator, MISO. They operate the grid in the Midwest area, I think, is probably the easiest way to summarize that. And their costs were baseline $90 billion for the MISO region.
Well, to further talk about it, there certainly is federal jurisdiction on energy, but it comes through the FERC, not the EPA. And transmission is through the FERC. So that's where, that's back to the whole EPA thing. It's, if there is federal jurisdiction energy, it's supposed to be the FERC. So, okay, we'll close the special meeting. Thank you.